on the yellowing labels. "Langton to Lipman," read Ellen aloud. "This must be the one." Dougie heaved it down from the shelf, the sheer weight of it taking him by surprise. "Let's take it over to the table." Ellen lifted the lid and peered inside at the tightly packed files. She licked her forefinger and began to flick through them one by one. "Here it is. Gertrude May Lewis." She wrestled the buff file free and spread it open on the table. Dougie pulled up a chair and they sat side by side, their heads only inches apart, as they pieced together Gertie's history. Ellen pointed to the admission date. "Look at that. 1st of September, 1912.
"There you go, then," said Dougie. "She's been in here for..."
He began to count on his fingers. Ellen saved him the trouble. 44 years. He seemed impressed.
"That's quick math."
"Maths," she corrected. "You've surely been here long enough to know that."
"But..."
He stopped when he noticed her teasing smile. Ellen continued studying the file. "She was born on the 12th of August, 1871, so that makes her, what, 85 now? And 41 when she came to Ambergate." She shook her head and gazed at the ceiling. "She's been here for half her life." Dougie angled the file so he could get a closer look.
"Says here she was admitted with a diagnosis of intellectual insanity and melancholia."
They pored over the file in contemplative silence as they learned the scant details of Gertie's admission. Found wandering the streets of Manchester in stockinged feet, without a single penny to her name, she'd been brought in by the local police constable, after he could find no good reason to keep her in his cells. The notes described her as being 5'6", of slight build, with waist-length brown hair. "God, she's a shadow of her former self. She must only be about 5 foot now, and her hair is coarse and white."
"She is 85, reasoned Dougie.
"I'm sure her hair would have been white by now, even if she'd spent her entire life cocooned in luxury."
I suppose you're right." Ellen continued to read. "Hang about. According to this, she's married." She frowned at Dougie. "How odd that she appeared homeless when she was admitted. Perhaps he chucked her out."
"Yeah, that could be it," agreed Dougie. "Maybe that's why she went loopy."
"It says here she had a course of ECT that began in April 1940. Ellen raised her eyebrows. "What's that?"
"Electroconvulsive therapy," he confirmed. "Electrodes are placed on both sides of the patient's head and up to 150 volts passes through their brain."
"Lord above, that sounds gruesome."
"It's got a lot better," said Dougie. "At least the patient is anesthetized nowadays and given a muscle relaxant."
Ellen picked up the notes and read aloud. "The patient has responded well to the latest course of ECT and did not protest as much, which is a positive step. She displays all the signs of retrograde amnesia, having no memory of the treatment itself. During the last administration of ECT on the 8th of September 1940, the patient suffered a double fracture of the left leg during a particularly violent convulsion. At the time of writing, 16th September 1940, she refuses to speak to anyone and seems introverted and withdrawn. Her mood is apathetic, but she is no longer complaining, so I conclude that the ECT has been successful and recommend no further treatments. However, there is nothing medically wrong with her that prevents her from speaking, so she remains certified." "That's so sad," said Ellen, placing the notes back in the file. "She hasn't uttered a word for 16 years. That can't be right." "I'm going to see her tomorrow, and I don't care what Sister Winstanley says. This place has let her down, and it's time someone did something about it instead of just idly standing by." Dougie smiled at her determination.
"You do that, Ellen. Someone's got to fight Gertie's corner, and I can't think of anyone better.
Chapter 10. Good morning, Sister Atkins. How are you today?
Very well, Dr. Lambon. Yourself?
Can't complain.
The doctor blew on his hands and rubbed them together.
I say it's nippy out there this morning.
Sister Atkins thrust a mug in his direction.
Here, get your hands round that.
Thank you, sister.
He began thumbing through files on her desk.
I need to see the new admission. What's her name? Amy something.
Sullivan,
she confirmed.
You'll need to be firm with her. She's a troublesome one, if you ask me.
Dr. Lambourne continued to flick through the files, then looked up.
Well, I didn't.
Didn't what, doctor?
Ask you.
She pursed her lips and gave him a contrite stare.
Of course, Dr. Lambourne, I apologise.
He nodded.
No harm done, sister.
It was all very well being approachable and friendly with the nursing staff, but sometimes they overstepped the mark and needed reminding who was actually in charge around here. The staff nurses and sisters were mostly older than he was, and he found their flirtations mildly amusing, sometimes pitiful. Through the office window, he caught sight of a young nurse gently brushing a patient's hair, smoothing it down and smiling as she chatted.
A new recruit, I see.
They were always easy to spot. Having recovered from the doctor's slapdown, Sister joined him by the window.
Aye, that's student nurse Crosby. She's very, shall we say, enthusiastic.
Dr. Lambourne tucked a file under his arm. I'll go and introduce myself. Which bed has Amy Sullivan been allocated?
The one between Pearl and Queenie.
Dr. Lambourne smiled knowingly. Lucky girl. He approached the nurse from behind and gave a small cough.
I don't believe we've met.
The girl twisted round to face him. Her dark hair had been scooped into a tidy bun beneath her cap, save for a stray strand that hung down the middle of her forehead. She attempted to blow it out of the way as she wiped her hands down her apron.
I'm Dr. Lambourne, and you are student nurse Crosby, I believe.
He held onto her sweaty palm, amused by the rush of heat to her neck.
Yes, that's right. It's Ellen. I'm very pleased to meet you, Doctor.
And how are you settling in?
Well, it's not too bad. I'm a quick learner.
She hesitated and dropped her voice a little.
Since you're here, I wonder if I may have a word.
She glanced at Pearl sitting in the chair, her ample frame spilling over the sides.
In private.
I can still hear you, you know. I may be daft, but I'm not deaf and all.
Sorry, Pearl. Don't worry. It's not about you. I'll be back to finish your hair shortly.
Dr. Lambourne guided her to the end of the ward.
Well, what is it?
There's a patient in the sick ward who I really think needs to see a doctor. Not a medical one. One who can...
She tapped her own temple with her forefinger.
Sort her out.
A psychiatrist?
Yes, that's it. I was wondering if you could pay her a visit.
Sister Atkins had not exaggerated this girl's enthusiasm.
Tell me, student nurse Crosby, when were you put in charge of this hospital?
The last time I checked, student nurses ranked one above the old boy on the refractory ward who empties the chamber pots for 3 pence a week.
Although his words were spoken with a hint of a wry smile, they were enough to cause her hands to fly to her mouth and the words to come spluttering out.
I'm sorry, Dr. Lambourne. I didn't mean...
He placed his hand on her shoulder.
Rest assured that this patient of yours will be receiving the very best care this hospital has to offer. You don't need to worry or take it upon yourself to recommend treatment.
She nodded.
I understand.
His potent aftershave was making her eyes water.
Good. Now, can you tell me where I can find Amy Sullivan?
Yes, she's in the day room, Doctor.
Ellen returned to Pearl and resumed brushing her hair more savagely than she intended.
Ow!
Protested Pearl.
I'm sorry, Pearl.
She laid the brush down and took a strand of Pearl's hair between her fingers instead, gently teasing it into a loose curl.
He's gorgeous, isn't he?
Who is?
asked Ellen, genuinely puzzled. "Dr. Lamborn. He looks just like Clark Gable, without the daft tash, of course. Yeah, how old do you think he is?"
Ellen blew out her cheeks. "I've no idea. I didn't really look at him that closely. 30-ish, maybe a bit younger, I would guess."
"I think he has some foreign blood in him, Mediterranean, perhaps."
"Well, I suppose he does have a rather swarthy complexion. Anyway, it's none of our business where he..."
"He's not married, you know," Pearl interrupted.
"So what, Pearl? I couldn't care less if he's married or not. It's of no consequence to me."
Pearl chuckled to herself. "That's what they all say." He saw her in profile first, silhouetted in the window as the low morning sun shafted its beam across the carpet. She sat with her hands in her lap, one thigh crossed over the other, making circular motions with her raised foot. Her Ambergate special haircut exposed her slender neck. Whoever had cut it had not done a bad job. He'd seen a lot worse. He touched her shoulder. "Amy Sullivan?" She gazed at him, her deep brown eyes opening slightly wider at the sight of him. "Yes?" His heart started to gallop, as though he had suddenly exerted himself, instead of merely standing transfixed and immobile. He took a few steadying breaths, then loosened his tie. "I'm Dr. Lamborn." He reached down, picked up one of her hands, and attempted a handshake. She pulled her hand away and folded her arms across her chest.
"When can I go home?"
He'd lost count of how many times he'd been asked that question over the years. He gave the same answer he always did. "When you're better." "For God's sake, there's nothing wrong with me. Surely you can see that. Not like that bloody nutcase in the next bed who thinks she's the Queen of England, or that Pearl woman who's completely off her rocker. I shouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here at all if it wasn't for her." Dr. Lamborn pulled up a chair and sat down opposite Amy in the bay of the window. He put his file down on the window seat, leaned back and steepled his hands together. "Can you remember what it feels like to be happy, Amy?" The question seemed to take her by surprise, and she opened and closed her mouth again before answering.
"Define happiness."
He thought about this.
"It's a difficult thing to define. You have to be unhappy to understand it."
"Well, I should be a bloody expert then." He nodded. "Some people pursue happiness, others create it." She glared at him, not bothering to hide her contempt.
"So you're saying it's my own fault that I'm stuck in here?"
"I'm not saying that at all, although it's interesting that that's what you inferred." He noticed her balled up fists and white knuckles.
"Why are you so angry?"
She let out a mirthless laugh and clapped her hands together slowly, sarcastically.
"Oh, well spotted, Doctor. Years of medical school have obviously paid off."
She stood up and the shapeless dress slipped off one shoulder, exposing her collarbone. She hoisted the dress back in place.
"I've had enough of this. I'm going back to my bed."
He stared after her retreating figure, clenching and unclenching his jaw as he mulled over his new young patient. If she was as difficult as this at home, he could appreciate why her father had brought her in, but it didn't take an expert to realise there was a lot more going on beneath the surface. He picked up her file and strode back along the ward, ignoring Pearl's plaintive cries as he passed the end of her bed.
"Dr. Lamborn, you said I could go home this week. Why haven't you come to see me? How much longer do I have to stay here? Dr. Lamborn, are you listening to me?"
The beds in the sick ward were much farther apart than the ones on the long-stay ward. There were fewer patients here, and none outstayed their welcome, most of them leaving feet first. Ellen approached Gertie's bed and stared at the old woman curled up in a fetal position, her mouth agape and a wet patch of drool on the pillow beside her. A faded floral curtain fluttered on the breeze coming from the open window. The staff nurse had told her that Gertie was in a lot of pain and that sleep was difficult. She seemed calm and peaceful now, though, and as Ellen gazed at her sleeping form, she decided it would be unfair to wake her. She sat down on the chair beside the bed and pulled out the copy of My Weekly she had bought especially for Gertie. It reminded her of home. Ellen's father visited the newsagent every Tuesday and bought a copy for his wife, along with a 2-ounce tin of Old Holborn for himself. Mrs. Crosby was not fond of money being spent on her, even though the magazine only cost threepence, but Ellen knew she devoured each new issue, particularly its endless supply of knitting patterns. She studied the model on the front of the magazine in her delightful, gaily embroidered jumper, and thought of her mother. Mrs. Crosby would no doubt love to knit the garment for herself, but Ellen knew she would not squander valuable wool on anything so frivolous, not with a young boy to clothe, one who wore out jumpers at an alarming rate. She flicked past the recipes for Christmas gingerbread and mock chicken casserole and settled down to read the first story. She had not made it beyond a sentence or two when, without warning, Gertie burst into a violent coughing fit, making her jump. The magazine slid to the floor. She poured a glass of water from the jug on the bedside cabinet.
"Gertie, it's me, Ellen. I mean, student nurse Crosby."
She pulled the old lady into a sitting position, surprised by how little she now weighed, and propped her up on the pillows. Gertie continued to cough, her eyes watering as she spat the resulting blood-splattered phlegm into a sputum mug. Ellen raised the glass of water to her cracked lips.
"Here, drink this. That's better, isn't it? How are you feeling, Gertie?"
Gertie gave no indication she had even heard the question. Undeterred, Ellen ploughed on.
"I've had a look at your case notes. I'm not supposed to, really, but what harm can it do, eh? I know how long you've been here, Gertie, and it must seem a big frightening world outside those doors. But you may be able to get out, if only you'll start talking again. I've spoken to a doctor and he didn't promise anything, but..."
She noticed that Gertie had closed her eyes.
"Can you hear me?"
She tapped the back of the old lady's wrist.
"Gertie, I know you were married once."
Gertie's eyes flew open, and she fixed Ellen with a stare so penetrating she was forced to look away. She stared at the third finger of the old woman's left hand. No wedding band and no indication that she had ever worn one. No telltale indention of the flesh, no pale silvery skin.
"Where's your husband now, Gertie? Is that why you're in here? Did he leave you?"
With an almost imperceptible nod of her head, Gertie pulled the sheets up to her chin, rolled onto her side, and closed her eyes. Chapter 11. Although Ambergate housed both male and female patients, the two sides were run as separate entities, and patients were not permitted to mix on the wards. This segregation of the sexes often led to frustration amongst the inmates, who would find ingenious ways to arrange clandestine meetings whilst the staff turned a blind eye. Out on the airing courts, where the patients took their daily exercise, one enterprising girl, Belinda, had set up a nice little urner for herself, allowing male patients tending the market garden to down tools and fondle her through the gate in exchange for a cigarette or two. At first, Ellen had intervened to stop these unsavoury trysts, but Sister Atkins had explained that even mental patients needed to relieve themselves. "I find it as disgusting as you do," she'd told Ellen. "But it calms them down, makes them easier to handle." She'd winked. "And that can only be good for us nurses, right?" Ellen had nodded and soon learned to look the other way. It was apparent this morning that the rain had set in for the day, and Ellen bemoaned the fact that the patients would be even more fractious and difficult without a break in the monotony of their routine. Sister Atkins swept her forearm over the window to clear the mist and peered out at the torrential downpour. "It's barely spitting," she declared, glancing at her watch. "Right, come on then, you lot, we're going outside."
She looked at Belinda, who was sitting on the edge of her bed, her hand moving rhythmically between her thighs.
"For Christ's sake, not here, please, Belinda!"
Belinda looked up, a glazed expression on her face. She smiled, revealing a row of huge yellow teeth that would not have looked out of place on a cart horse.
"I need to go outside, sister."
She cocked her head and slid her forefinger slowly in and out of her mouth.
"You know what I mean?" "I just said we're going outside, and if you weren't so intent on pleasuring yourself, you would have heard me, you disgusting little whore."
Sister strode over and hoisted Belinda off the bed, with a clip round the back of her head for good measure.
"Go and wait in the day room."
Outside, on the airing court, Ellen stood with her back pressed against the wall, the eaves offering some meagre shelter. The patients walked around the perimeter, the track worn down with the passage of endless shuffling feet, following each other like sheep. Ellen was reminded of the tiger at Bellevue Zoo. Even though he had a large enclosure with trees, rocks and a small pond in the middle, he only ever paced around the fence line, snarling at visitors as he went past. She watched as Belinda said something to Amy, who reacted with a hard shove in the girl's chest, sending Belinda staggering backwards. Ellen made to intervene, but Belinda seemed to have got the message, and instead turned and headed towards the far corner of the court. Ellen could hear her whistling to a figure in the distance. He was hunched over, digging at the vegetable patch. But he straightened up when he heard the female voice calling his name. With a glance towards his charge nurse, he ambled over, his hands thrust deep into his pockets as he approached the fence. He must have been 70 if he was a day, his bald head shiny with rain and cross-hatched with shaving cuts. "Payment first," demanded Belinda. He fished out two cigarettes and looked her up and down.
"Top and bottom."
Belinda grabbed the cigarettes, tucking one behind each ear. She looked over her shoulder at Ellen, a salacious grin on her lips, as she slowly unbuttoned her dress. Ellen set the huge communal makeup box on the table in the middle of the day room.
"Right, who wants to go first, then?"
It was always preferable for a staff member to apply the makeup. The patients tended to be heavy-handed with the rouge and the kohl, often ending up with clown-like faces that only accentuated their manic appearance. She picked up the stubby pink lipstick.
"Amy, do you want some?"
Amy looked up from the book in her lap.
"No, thank you. I'm not going to some stupid dance. I've been here 2 weeks now, and I want to see a doctor. You can't keep me locked up forever."
Ellen sighed. The young girl had been repeating this mantra day in, day out since she arrived, but there was no way she was going home yet. It wasn't a choice. Her father had signed her over and the family doctor had backed him up.
"You don't need to wear the makeup, but you will be going to the dance."
Amy slammed the book shut and dropped it onto the window seat.
"A lunatic's ball. Are you seriously expecting me to shuffle round a dance floor with that mixture of ungainly, pathetic creatures?"
She nodded towards the window.
"I've seen the way they traipse round the grounds, hardly able to walk straight, let alone manage a waltz."
She folded her arms.
"I'm not going, and you can't make me."
Pearl waddled over, her puffy feet swollen like dough that had been left to prove and was now spilling over the edges of her shoes.
"Well, I'm going. Can you do me?"
She huffed, plunking her 20-stone frame in a chair. Ellen picked up the pot of face powder and began to blend it over Pearl's face. She had flawless skin already, but all her features were crowded into the middle of her moon face.
"Give me some lipstick too, will you? And can I put my wedding dress on?"
Sister Atkins shouted over from the door.
"How many times, Pearl? We don't have your bloody wedding dress here. You can wear the hospital issue dress like everybody else. Honestly, I don't know where you think you are sometimes. This isn't Butlin's, you know."
"Purse your lips for me, Pearl." Ellen applied the pink lipstick carefully and stood back to admire her handiwork. She felt sorry for Pearl. Only in her mid-30s she had been in and out of Ambergate for the past 12 years. A chubby girl with modest looks, she'd had no trouble saving herself for the man she was going to marry, and could scarcely believe it when the handsome GI with the exotic accent asked her to marry him on only their second date. Her mother had been beside herself with excitement and had managed to procure some parachute silk from which she made the most exquisite wedding dress for her daughter. The neighbours had all mucked in and handed over their ration coupons, thus enabling Pearl to have a 3-tier fruitcake, swathed in royal icing and decorated with pale pink sugar paste rosebuds. Ken had announced he had to go away for a couple of months, but would be back for their wedding. Caught up in the excitement and swayed by his declarations of love, Pearl surrendered her virginity to him before he left. When the big day finally arrived, she waited patiently at the altar for over an hour, ignoring the mutterings of the congregation, until she was forced to admit that he wasn't coming back. She retreated to her bedroom with the top tier of the cake and refused to take off the wedding dress for 2 whole weeks. Sister Atkins had recounted Pearl's story to Ellen with obvious glee, but it wasn't until she got to the punchline that she broke down in hysterics. Apparently, Ken had bedded Pearl and agreed to marry her for a bet. A mental breakdown followed, and Pearl had turned to food for comfort before being brought to Ambergate by her frazzled mother. Ellen finished brushing Pearl's hair and pushed her fringe to one side, securing it with a clip.
"There you are, Pearl. Beautiful."
She ignored the sarcastic snort from Sister Atkins. "Who's next?"
"I can't find my tiara."
Amy glared at Queenie.
"Oh, for God's sake, give it a rest. Your name's Gladys, and you're not, and never will be, the Queen of England."
"Please, Amy," warned Ellen.
"Queenie means no harm."
The patient's ball was one of the few occasions when the sexes were encouraged to meet and interact with each other, so the dance hall was almost full by the time Ellen arrived with her entourage. She'd been ordered to chaperone Pearl, Queenie, Belinda and Amy, but judging by the way the patients were lined up, men on one side and women on the other, the job would not be too onerous. She spotted Dougie at the other side of the hall and gave him a cheery wave. He had taken off his white coat and dispensed with his tie, his beige shirt open at the neck and a pair of green braces holding up his trousers.
"Who's that?"
asked Amy.
"His name's Douglas Lyons. He's a second-year student nurse."
"Hmm. I think he's giving you the glad eye." Ellen glared at Amy.
"Don't be ridiculous. He's just a friend, and you need to stop being so insolent."
She surprised herself with her sharp tone.
"Ooh, touched a nerve, have I?" "Be quiet!"
Ellen ran her hands through her hair as she saw Dougie approaching.
"Evening, Ellen. Your first lunatic's ball, I assume."
Amy crossed her arms.
"Charming. I can't speak for this lot, but I can assure you that I am no more of a lunatic than you are."
Dougie turned to her. "I do apologize, that was rude of me, but I sure meant no offense."
He placed his hand on her forearm.
"Please forgive me."
Amy moistened her lips and smiled coyly as she cocked her head to one side.
"That's quite all right. I forgive you, Douglas."
Ellen interjected a little more savagely than the situation warranted.
"It's Nurse Lyons to you."
She grabbed Amy's arm and squeezed it tightly.
"Come on, let's go and sit with the others over there."
Dougie called after them.
"Tell Pearl I'll be over later for my dance."
The room was cavernous with ceilings as high as a cathedral's, so much so that the music from the gramophone sounded hollow as the needle scratched its way around the surface of the record. A few of the male patients had been herded onto the dance floor, and they swayed awkwardly in their ill-fitting suits, which were obviously subjected to the same boiling regime as the women's dresses. With trousers at half-mast, lumpy shoulder pads and jackets that had not been buttoned up in the correct sequence, most of them looked as though they had been shipwrecked. Ellen rested her gaze on a tall, gangly chap, who circled the dance floor with an unusual high-stepping gait. His head bent so low his chin rested on his chest. He stopped, lifted his head slightly, and launched into an animated conversation, gesticulating wildly, spittle flying as he became more and more agitated. It was impossible to tell what had sparked his wrath, because he was speaking to an empty space. Dougie sidled up to him and placed an arm around his shoulders. Ellen smiled at the immediate calming effect this had on the patient. Dougie patted him on the arm and steered him in her direction.
"I'd like to introduce you to Alroy Bennett," he announced, affectionately known to all as Uncle Alroy.
Ellen extended her hand.
"I'm pleased to meet you, Uncle Alroy. My name's Nurse Crosby," she replied, daringly dropping the student.
"Uncle Alroy is one of our long-stay patients," Dougie explained.
"Been here for nearly 40 years, haven't you, Uncle?"
"I've been shot at, you know."
Ellen took a step back.
"Oh, my goodness,"
Dougie laughed. "Yes, Uncle, but not recently," he whispered an aside to Ellen. "Although that could be arranged." He turned back to Alroy and clapped him on his back. "Uncle was injured in the trenches in the First World War." Uncle Alroy tapped his own head.
"I have still got shrapnel floating around my brain. Left for dead I was, until the burial party found me and carted me off to the hospital."
He appeared to spot someone over the other side of the room and gave a salute before he marched off to greet them.
"Poor old sod," said Dougie. "He can seem normal for days, but then the madness returns. They've tried everything, but he's completely institutionalized now."
He lowered his voice to a whisper, so Ellen had to strain to hear over the music.
"Did you notice those indentations either side of his head?"
Ellen nodded.
"They're hard to miss. Prefrontal leucotomy in 1942,
Dougie confirmed. "The doctor drilled holes in his skull to access his brain, then poked around a bit and declared him cured."
"Good heavens, that sounds barbaric,"
Dougie shrugged. "I'll say, but he's a lot calmer now than he used to be by all accounts, so who knows? Anyway, there was a reason for bringing him over. He remembers your Gertie. She used to be a lovely singer, apparently, and knew her way around the dance floor, too."
"Really? Oh, I'd love to talk to him."
"I thought you might. Listen, when you go off duty tonight, come to the ward. I'm on until morning, and I'll clear it with the charge nurse. I'm not promising anything. Uncle Alroy is a bit unpredictable, as you've noticed. But it's gotta be worth a go."
"Thank you, Dougie. You're so kind."
The strains of Moonlight Serenade echoed around the room.
"Uh-oh, that's my cue."
Ellen watched as Pearl lumbered across the room, her arms outstretched towards Dougie. Taking one of her hands, he guided her gracefully onto the dance floor. He glanced at Ellen over his shoulder and winked.
"See you later,"
he mouthed.
Chapter 12. There was something serene about a ward at night, even at Ambergate. After the inevitable chaos of the daytime, the low lighting and comparative silence provided a soporific ambiance. Dougie put his finger to his lips as he unlocked the door and beckoned Ellen in. She crept past the charge nurse's office and noticed he was fast asleep with his legs up on his desk, his mouth open, and an annoying clicking sound stuck in his throat. Dougie nodded in the charge nurse's direction.
"You can tell who does all the work around here."
He walked softly down the middle of the ward, his shoes making barely a sound. The last thing a nurse wanted at this time of night was to wake the patients with the sound of his clodhopping.
"Uncle Alroy is in the day room. Don't worry about keeping him up. He tends to drift off around 3.
She found Alroy sitting in a straight-backed chair, his escape blocked by a food tray bolted to the arms.
"What's he doing in a toddler's high chair?"
she whispered. Dougie appeared a little uncomfortable.
"He can't sleep, so unless he's contained, he'll spend all night wandering up and down the ward, picking fights with God knows who. Nobody'll get any sleep if he's allowed to roam freely."
Ellen nodded towards the office.
"Including your charge nurse. Believe me, Ellen, the patients don't want to get on the wrong side of him. He has his own way of dealing with them, and it's not pretty."
"Can't you give Alroy something to help him sleep?"
He's already had his pyraldehyde. He loves the vile-tasting stuff for some reason. But I think he's immune to it now. He's had enough to put an elephant out. I can't give him any more.
He took her arm. Come on, come say hello. The old man lifted his head as he heard them approaching. If he recognized Ellen from earlier, he didn't show it. He reached out and picked a piece of imaginary fluff off her shoulder, brought it close to his eye, and rolled it between his thumb and forefinger. The familiar smell of the pyraldehyde lingered on his breath.
You remember Nurse Crosby from the dance? She's come to talk to you about Gertie.
Who?
His voice was gruff and his eyelids heavy.
Gertie, confirmed Ellen.
Uncle Alroy's tone was impatient.
I know who Gertie is. I meant, who are you?
Dougie laughed. I need to get back on the ward. I'll leave you to it.
Ellen pulled a chair alongside the old man, grimacing as the wooden legs scraped across the floor, cutting through the silence.
So, you remember Gertie, do you?
He fixed his eyes on her, the irises mottled with age.
Aye, course I do. She was quite a looker back in the day, and I had a bit of a crush. By the time I arrived, she'd been here for 8 years or so, if I remember correctly. But I wouldn't bank on that. Looked out for me, she did. Came over and chatted when we were allowed. She's a good bit older than me, though.
How old are you, Uncle Alroy?
He gazed up at the ceiling as though trying to work out a particularly difficult conundrum.
I'm buggered if I know.
Tell me what you do know, then. About Gertie, I mean.
Oh, it's a sad tale. It's why it stuck with me. That and the fact she must have told me the same thing about 100 times. She was fond of repeating herself, that one.
He chuckled. Ellen pressed him for more.
I'd love to hear her story.
Aye, well, she was working as a chambermaid at that posh hotel in town, the Midland. Do you know it?
Ellen gave a low whistle.
I'll say, it's quite a landmark. I've never been inside, mind.
Alroy rested his chin in his palm.
No, me neither. Anyhow, one day, a young chap comes to stay. He'd come from America on business. He was a stock buyer, you know, horses and that, and he'd been up in Scotland looking at Clydesdales. He came down to Manchester and took a bit of a shine to our Gertie. As I said, she was quite a beauty back then. He was a bit younger than her, but they started courting, and the next thing you know, they're getting married. Well, Gertie was 40-something by this time, and Edgar was only in his 30s, but she told the Midland what they could do with their job, and they set sail to start a new life together in America.
Ellen edged forward in her seat. She could not imagine Gertie on the arm of her young American husband.
How exciting for her. So what happened next?
Treated the crossing as a honeymoon, they did. They could only afford steerage, mind you, but it was an adventure all the same for Gertie, who'd never been out of Manchester.
Alroy sighed and rubbed his bleary eyes.
Well, you know the rest.
I'm sorry?
Which one of us is crazy here?
I'm not following you.
Ship hit an iceberg, didn't it?
The memory of Gertie's notes flashed up. She'd been admitted in September 1912.
You mean she was on the Titanic?
Aye. She made it into a lifeboat, but poor old Edgar was still on the ship as it slid beneath the water. He jumped into the sea, but it was freezing. I mean, obviously, there were icebergs and all. According to Gertie, there was still room in her lifeboat, but the officer in charge wouldn't go back to pick up the men in the sea. Said they would be overrun and sink themselves.
How terrible.
Alroy nodded his agreement.
And Edgar's body never did wash up.
So, Gertie couldn't even give him a burial. You know, she was found wandering the streets before she was admitted.
Alroy nodded.
She never got over losing him, if you ask me.
Ellen chewed on her thumbnail, deep in thought, her brow furrowed in concentration.
How did she get back to Manchester?
A couple of weeks after sinking, she had to board a ship to bring her home. You'd think she'd be terrified of getting on another boat, but she wasn't. She told me she half hoped that one would sink too, taking her with it this time. She'd given up. Didn't think she could carry on without him.
Ellen took hold of Alroy's hand and ran her thumb over his swollen knuckles.
Thank you, Uncle Alroy. You've been a great help.
My pleasure.
He placed his hands on top of his head and began to pull at his hair.
I've been shot at, you know.
Ellen crept back down the ward, mulling over Gertie's tragic story. Dougie was sitting at a desk in the corner, the angle-poised lamp directed onto his newspaper.
All done? How was it?
She bent down so her eyes were level with his.
Dougie, I really need you to do me a favour.
He chewed on the end of his pencil and tapped his paper.
Sure. 4 across, Scottish landowner, 5 letters.
Led. He counted out the letters.
Oh, yeah. Clever girl.
Never mind your bloody crossword, Dougie. Please listen to me, she urged. Can you meet me in the students' bar tomorrow night, say 6 o'clock?
He looked up from the paper.
Sure. What's the matter?
I'll tell you all about it tomorrow.
Great. It's a date.
She threw a backward glance over her shoulder and shook her head.
It's not a date.
Still, she couldn't help but smile. The next evening he came through the door at exactly 6 o'clock. He wiped his feet on the mat and shook the droplets of rain from his hair, showering the group of students who were huddled round a nearby table.
"Oi, Douglas," said one of them, wiping his eyes. "You're not a bloody Labrador."
"Sorry, pal,"
he apologised. Ellen laughed to herself at the exchange, then stood up and called across to him.
"Dougie, over here. I've got you one in."
He meandered over and sat down opposite her, taking a long, grateful gulp of the beer. The foam settled on his top lip, and Ellen marvelled at how he could be oblivious to it.
"Dougie,"
she mimed, wiping her lips.
"You've got, you know..."
He ran his tongue over the beer moustache.
"Thanks."
"When are you due back on?"
she asked. He pushed up his sleeve and squinted at his watch. "Not until 11, but I should really get some shut-eye before then."
"Oh, I'm sorry, you should have said. Look, I won't keep you long."
She picked at the beer mat, pulling it apart as she spoke.
"I know what happened to Gertie."
"I'm glad Alroy was useful. Tell me."
"Oh, yes. He revealed quite a lot, actually."
She filled him in on what Alroy had told her, his eyes widening as she reached the end of the story.
"Good God, that's quite a tale. Poor old Gertie."
He shook his head and took another swig of his pint.
"How is it you think I can help you, though?"
Ellen shuffled uncomfortably in her seat. The beer mat was now a pile of confetti.
"Would you come and see her?"
"Well, yes, if that's what you want, but I'm not sure what good it will do."
"She's not got long left, Dougie. I just think if she hears your accent, it might remind her of Edgar and send her on her way with some semblance of peace."
Dougie spluttered on his pint, the beer coming out of his nose.
"Ellen, I'm not impersonating a dead guy, no matter how well-meaning your intentions."
"I'm not asking you to impersonate anybody. Just be yourself. Reassure her."
She noticed his features soften a little and dared to venture further.
"Perhaps tell her you'll be waiting for her on the other side. Nothing too specific, of course."
"Wait, waiting on the other side? Have you taken leave of your senses?"
His voice had risen a couple of octaves. She drained her drink, plonked her glass on the table, and stood to leave.
"No, you're right. It's mad, completely mad. Forget I even mentioned it."
Chapter 13. Amy gazed out of the window of the day room across the vegetable patch and over to the airing court on the male side. She watched as a lone figure swamped in a trench coat scrabbled around in the dirt for dog ends. She'd noticed that some of the male patients at the ball had blackened fingertips and noses as a result of smoking cigarette butts. What a desperate existence they led. She squinted at the male nurse in charge, one foot up against the wall, casually smoking a cigarette himself.
It was the American one she'd met at the dance. She couldn't imagine why someone as charismatic and charming as he would choose to work in a desolate place such as this. Some people really had no ambition. She turned as she heard someone calling her name.
Amy, come on, it's time to get ready.
Nurse Crosby, Ellen, made it sound as though she was preparing for a glamorous night on the town instead of visiting time in a lunatic asylum. Reluctantly, Amy heaved herself off the chair and ambled over to her.
I am ready.
Ellen looked her up and down, frowning at the egg yolk stains on her front.
Let's get you a clean dress, shall we? Can't have your father seeing you like this. And your hair could do with a wash. Come on, let's get you in the bath.
She clapped her hands as she walked down the middle of the ward.
Those of you who are expecting visitors, please come with me.
A small queue of patients formed behind her as they followed her to the bathroom. Sister Atkins had already filled the two baths, and Ellen stood between them, arms akimbo, her face flushed from the rising steam.
Come on, don't hang about, we've not got all day.
Obviously used to this procedure, several patients clambered to go first, stripping off their dresses and underwear without the slightest trace of embarrassment. 17 days Amy had languished in this place, and she'd only had one bath in all that time. She was suddenly desperate to rid herself of the accumulated grime, but she wasn't quick enough, and Pearl and another patient took the first two baths. Water sloshed over the side as Pearl lowered herself in.
It's like bathing a baby elephant, said Sister Atkins,
as she poured water over Pearl's head. Without ceremony, the first two patients were sluiced down, scrubbed, and then ordered to stand up and climb out. Sister Atkins wiped her brow.
Next!
Amy stepped forward with a weak smile.
I'll undress when the bath's ready, if you don't mind.
Nurse Atkins stared at her.
It is ready!
But it's the same water that Pearl used. Sister Atkins turned to Ellen, who was busy with another patient.
Have you heard this one here?
She nodded towards Amy.
Wants fresh water, can you believe?
She moved closer to Amy, their faces only an inch apart.
Now, listen to me, she spat. I don't know who you think you are, but we're not running a spa here. We've not got time to empty the water out between each patient, you silly little girl.
But this isn't hygienic. It's more like a sheep dip. Sister Atkins snapped.
Right, that's it. Get to the back of the queue.
She shoved Amy hard in the chest, sending her stumbling backwards. She slipped on the scummy water that Pearl had displaced and hit her cheek on the side of the bath. For a moment she was stunned by the sharp pain and fought against the fuzziness that threatened to envelop her. She raised her hand to her cheek. It felt hot, and already she could feel her eyes swelling. But she would not cry out. She would not give Sister Atkins that satisfaction. Amy waited in a side room with a few of the other patients who were expecting visitors. She'd never been in this part of the hospital before. It was obvious that it was the public face of the hospital. There was carpet on the floor for starters, albeit in a hideously garish pattern. A fire had been lit in the grate, and the logs crackled as the scent of burning pine filled the room. There was even a tall plant standing in a brass pot, its fronds green and lush. Pot plants were not allowed on the ward, as some patients had a habit of eating the soil. She didn't stand to greet her father, merely offered him her cheek as he bent to kiss her. If he was shocked by her appearance, he did an admirable job of concealing his feelings.
Sister filled me in about how you slipped and fell in the bathroom.
He reached out to touch her cheek, but she flinched and pulled away.
I bet she did.
The nurses had wrestled her into a clean dress, but she still stank and her hair was lank and greasy.
You've had your hair cut, I see. Oh, yes, they have a lovely salon here. You can even get a manicure.
She ruffled both her hands through her short hair, leaving it sticking out at all angles. She glared at her father.
They hacked it off with a pair of blunt scissors.
She drew a deep, shuddering breath. She would not cry, but her voice was barely a whisper.
You've got to take me home. I'll promise.
Amy, please, he warned. The doctor says you're not well.
Don't make me laugh. I've seen him once, and then all he did was try to provoke a reaction, goading me into an argument.
Let's be honest, Amy. You could start a riot in an empty house.
He sounded weary as he wrung his hands together, and she noticed the first signs of grey at his temples. Two vertical lines had appeared between his eyebrows, and even though the light had been snuffed out in his eyes long ago, they now held a vacant expression, as though he had lost the will to care. She loved him so much. Every fibre of him. The way he looked at her, the memory of his smell and shape as she'd clambered onto his lap by the fireside. As a child, there was nowhere she would rather have been. Except for her mother's lap, of course. That wasn't quite as comfy, it was true, not with her bony legs. But her hair was long and soft, and as Amy snuggled her head into her mother's chest, she would take a strand of her hair and run it across her top lip, reveling in the coconut scent and silky texture, until she drifted off to sleep. It was too hard. There was a golf ball lodged in her throat, and she felt a hot tear slip down her cheek, stinging her skin as it ran over the greys.
"I just miss her so much, Daddy,"
she whispered. She clamped her hands over her face so he wouldn't have to witness her tears and felt him lean forward and pat her knee.
"So do I, Amy. So do I.
You do forgive me, don't you?"
His voice came out hoarse, barely audible.
"You know I do."
After the visitors had departed and the patients had returned to the ward, Ellen busied herself with closing down the visitors' room. She raked over the fire until the embers were dispersed and pushed the chairs to the side of the room. Picking up the dustpan and brush, she was on her knees sweeping up the biscuit crumbs when she felt a tap on her shoulder.
"Oh, goodness me, you made me jump."
She struggled to her feet and addressed the visitor.
"Can I help you?"
"I'm so sorry to startle you. I'm Amy's father."
"Yes, I remember."
She held out her hand. "How do you do?" He twisted his cap in his hands.
"I'd like to give you something. It's to remain on my daughter's file, which I trust is confidential."
"Well, yes, of course. What is it?"
He rummaged in his jacket pocket and pulled out an envelope.
"It's a letter to the doctor, the one in charge of our Amy."
Ellen took the creamy envelope and nodded.
"I'll make sure Dr. Lamborn gets it."
Amy's father studied his shoes, never once looking up as he muttered his thanks and left the room. Chapter 14. Every breath she took seemed laboured, a coarse rattle as she inhaled, a hissing sound as she let go. Ellen filled a bowl of warm water and gently wiped a cloth over Gertie's face. The old lady had reached the end of the road, and Ellen was determined she would depart this world with as much dignity as possible. Gertrude May Lewis had come to the asylum a broken-hearted woman who had never recovered from the death of her husband, had never had the chance to love again, and was now facing her final journey. Ellen had no idea what would be waiting for her at the end of it, but if there was such a thing as heaven, a place where you were reunited with your loved ones, then she would see to it that Gertie was looking her best.
"There you are, Gertie,"
she soothed as she patted the old lady's cheeks dry. Then, with a furtive glance towards Sister's office, she pulled a compact out of her pocket and dabbed powder over Gertie's face.
"Aren't you going to look nice when you see Edgar again, hmm?"
The old lady lay propped up on two pillows, staring directly up at the ceiling. At the mention of Edgar's name, there was a barely noticeable flicker in her eyes. Ellen pulled out her tweezers and began to pluck the coarse hairs from Gertie's chin. She tipped a bottle of English lavender onto her finger and dabbed the scent behind Gertie's ears. Finally, she brushed what was left of the old lady's white hair, skillfully arranging it so it covered most of her pink scalp.
"There you are, Gertie. Don't you look a picture?"
She wafted the thin sheet covering Gertie's body to let some fresh air under the covers, wrinkling her nose as she did so. The English lavender was clearly not up to the job of masking the purulent odour. She folded back the sheet and lifted Gertie's nightdress. On the bony protrusion of the old woman's hip was a festering necrotic bedsore, the flesh around it blackened and oozing pus. Ellen covered her mouth with her hand and pinched her nose as she went to fetch a bowl and cloth. After swabbing the wound and applying a puff of zinc powder, she took the old woman's hand and held it in her own. It was cool to the touch, the thin skin silvery, the nails yellow and ridged.
"I'm so sorry the system has let you down, Gertie. I know all about Edgar, and I must say he sounds like a wonderful young man. You've been denied a lifetime of happiness together, but he's waiting for you now. I'm sure of it. You can let go."
Gertie's eyes were closed, her breathing shallow, but her mouth bore the trace of a faint smile. Ellen could feel her own eyelids beginning to droop. She'd had a long day and should really be getting some sleep. She leaned forward, placed her arm on the bed, and laid her head in the crook of her elbow. She would just grab a few minutes. She had no idea how long she had dozed, but she was woken by a hand on her shoulder. Groggily, she looked up and saw Dougie smiling down.
"Hello, you," he said, sitting on the edge of the bed. "You look shattered. Why don't you call it a night? I'll take over here."
Ellen rubbed the sleep from her eyes.
"You came. I thought you said..."
He shushed her with a finger to the lips.
"I thought, what the hell? What harm can it do?"
"Oh, thank you, Dougie," she breathed. "Will you talk to her?"
He nodded. "Of course I will." He turned to Gertie, and Ellen marvelled at the effortless way he spoke, his tone reassuring and sincere. He was a natural.
"How are you, Gertie, my love?"
He winked at Ellen. She knew he was exaggerating his accent for the old lady's benefit, and she could have hugged him. He took hold of Gertie's hand, running his thumb over the back of it. Then he reached up and caressed her weathered cheek, all the time gently murmuring her name. Ellen was mesmerized by his tenderness.
"Ask her if she remembers you,"
she said quietly. He took a step backwards and whispered in Ellen's ear.
"I'm not Edgar. I told you I wouldn't pretend to be."
His voice was tinged with kindness, but she knew he meant it.
"I'm sorry, I got caught up in the moment. You're just so..."
"I'm just Dougie, doing a friend a favor."
"I know, and I'll be eternally grateful."
She stared down at Gertie's sleeping form, her chest barely rising with each breath.
"She looks peaceful now, doesn't she?"
Dougie nodded.
"I wonder if she can hear us."
Right on cue, Gertie opened her eyes and lifted her hand. Her mouth opened, then closed, her lips twisting and gurning. Ellen picked up a glass of water.
"Here you are. Have a little drink."
Gertie shook her head and brushed the glass away. With a monumental effort, she raised her hand and beckoned Ellen to lean in closer. Ellen bent down, her ear close to the old woman's mouth.
"What is it, Gertie? Do you want to say something?"
It began with a few rasping sounds from deep within Gertie's throat, her vocal cords evidently having trouble responding to what they were being asked to do. But as she took her final shuddering breath, her first words for 16 years echoed in Ellen's ear. Ellen straightened up, gently closed Gertie's eyes, and turned to face Dougie, her own voice barely a whisper.
"She spoke."
"What?"
"She spoke, Dougie."
She allowed herself a small smile.
"What did she say?"
"She just said, thank you."
Dougie held his arms wide, and she didn't hesitate as she collapsed into them, burying her face in his white coat.
"Thank you, Dougie. That was all because of you."
Chapter 15. Dr. Lamborn ran his hand over his chin, the stubble reminding him that he needed to purchase a new blade. He adjusted the knot in his tie as he heard the door brush across the carpet and stood to greet his patient. "Here's Amy, Dr. Lamborn," the nurse announced as she pushed her young charge into his office. Amy glared at the nurse.
"Don't shove me. I'm quite capable of walking into a room unaided."
The nurse rolled her eyes.
"She's all yours, Doctor."
He indicated the chair opposite him. "Please have a seat." She slumped down, her eyes blazing with undisguised fury, and he was glad the enormous mahogany desk stood as a barrier between them. He'd encountered all manner of patients in his time, had been physically attacked on more than one occasion, but none of them had unnerved him as much as this young girl did. He clasped his hands together and laid them on the desk in front of him. It would not be helpful to either of them if she noticed they were shaking. He took a sip of water and cleared his throat.
"How are you feeling, Amy?"
She rocked back in her chair, placed her hands behind her head, and studied the ceiling.
"It's been a month, Dr. Lamborn. Why are you keeping me here?"
"It's for your own good."
"Well, it's not working. I'd be better off at home. My father said he's forgiven me."
Dr. Lamborn glanced down at the desk drawer. It was slightly open, and he caught a glimpse of the creamy envelope. "The doctor," written in copperplate on the front. He closed the drawer and turned the brass key.
"Tell me about your earliest memory, Amy."
"Why? What's that got to do with anything?" He smiled.
"Just humour me."
She sighed and folded her arms.
"What's the difference between God and a psychiatrist?"
He tapped his pencil on his pad.
"I don't know. Please enlighten me."
"God doesn't think